Our reading this morning is excerpted from the Declaration of Independence by Thomas Jefferson. He wrote, "In Congress, July 4, 1776, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all people are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among people, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these united colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." Later this week, we will observe the holiday honoring the birth of our nation, the United States of America. Before I begin, this presentation is by no means an exhausting or complete survey, but instead aims to offer us a small bit of reflection on the experience of what it is to be an American. Where possible, language that is gender biased or politically partisan has been removed or adapted, but in order to preserve the spirit of some of these powerful messages, some remains. And I'll invite you to contemplate the words and concepts regarding America and being American contained in these readings. The first selection is excerpted from a letter written by Ralph Waldo Emerson, in which he shares thoughts on the subjects of slavery and emancipation. He wrote, "We cannot but remember that there have been days in American history when, if the free states had done their duty, slavery had been blocked by an immovable barrier, and our recent calamities forever precluded. The free states yielded, and every compromise was surrender and invited new demands. Here again is a new occasion which heaven offers to sense and virtue. It looks as if we held the fate of the fairest possession of mankind in our hands, to be saved by our firmness or to be lost by hesitation." I shall not attempt to unfold the details of this project by project of emancipation. It has been stated with a great ability by several of its leading advocates. I will only advert to some leading points of the argument, at the risk of repeating the reasons of others. The war is welcome to the Southerner, a chivalrous sport to him, like hunting, and suits his semi-civilized condition. On the climbing scale of progress, he is just up to war and has never appeared to such advantage as in the last 12 months. It does not suit us. We are advanced some ages on the war state, to trade, art, and general cultivation. His laborer works for him at home so that he loses no labor by the war. All our soldiers are laborers, so that the South, with its inferior numbers, is almost on a footing in effective war population with the North. Again, as long as we fight without any affirmative step taken by the government, any word intimating forfeiture in the rebel states of their old privileges under the law, they and we fight on the same side for slavery. Again, if we conquer the enemy, what then? We shall still have to keep him under, and it will cost as much to hold him down as it did to get him down. Neither do I doubt, if such a composition should take place, that the Southerners will come back quietly and politely, leaving their haughty dictation. It will be an era of good feelings. There will be a lull after so loud a storm, and no doubt there will be discreet men from that section who will earnestly strive to inaugurate more moderate and fair administration of the government. And the North will, for a time, have its full share and more in place and council. But this will not last, not for want of sincere goodwill and sensible Southerners, but because slavery will again speak through them its harsh necessity. It cannot live but by injustice, and it will be unjust and violent to the end of the world. Now, in the name of all that is simple and generous, why should not this great right be done? Why should not America be capable of a second stroke for the well-being of the human race as 80 or 90 years ago she was for the first? Of an affirmative step in the interests of human civility urged on her, too, not by any romance of sentiment, but by her own extreme perils. It is very certain that the statesman who shall break through the cobwebs of doubt, fear, and petty cavil that lie in the way will be greeted by the unanimous thanks of mankind. But this measure, to be effectual, must come speedily. The weapon is slipping out of our hands. Time, say the Indian scriptures, drinketh up the essence of every great and noble action which ought to be performed and which is delayed in the execution. I hope it is not a fatal objection to this policy that it is simple and beneficent thoroughly, which is the tribute of a moral action. An unprecedented material prosperity has not tended to make us Stoics or Christians, but the laws by which the universe is organized reappear at every point and will rule it. The end of all political struggle is to establish morality as the basis of all legislation. It is not free institutions, it is not a republic, it is not a democracy. That is the end. No, but only the means. Morality is the object of government. We want a state of things in which crime shall not pay. This is the consolation on which we rest in the darkness of the future and the afflictions of today, that the government of the world is moral and does forever destroy what is not. It is the maxim of natural philosophers that the natural forces wear out in time all obstacles and take place, and it is the maxim of history that victory always falls at last where it ought to fall, or there is perpetual march and progress to new ideas. But in either case, no link of the chain can drop out. Nature works through her appointed elements, and ideas must work through the brains and the arms of good and brave men, or they are no better than dreams. Our second selection today is an excerpt from a speech given by Senator Margaret Chase Smith in 1950, addressing the behavior of persons in our nation during the McCarthy era. I'd like now to invite Lisa Coxford to share her words.
I would like to speak briefly and simply about a serious national condition. It is a national feeling of fear and frustration that could result in national suicide and at the end of everything that we Americans hold dear. It is a condition that comes from the lack of effective leadership in either the legislative branch or the executive branch of our government. That leadership is so lacking that serious and responsible proposals are being made that national advisory commissions be appointed to provide such critically needed leadership. I speak briefly as possible because too much harm has already been done with irresponsible words of bitterness and selfish political opportunism. I speak as briefly as possible because the issue is too great to be obscured by eloquence. I speak simply and briefly in the hope that my words will be taken to heart. I speak as a woman. I speak as a United States Senator. I speak as an American. I think that it is high time for the United States Senate and its members to do something soul-searching, for us to weigh our conscience on the manner in which we are performing our duty to the people of America, on the manner in which we are using or abusing our individual powers and privileges. I think that it is high time that we remembered that we have sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution. I think that it is high time that we remembered that the Constitution, as amended, speaks not only of the freedom of speech, but also the trial by jury instead of trial by accusation. Whether it be a criminal prosecution in court or a character prosecution in the Senate, there is little practical distinction when the life of a person has been ruined. Those of us who shout the loudest about Americanism in making character assassinations are all too frequently those who by our own words and acts ignore some of the basic principles of Americanism. The right to criticize. The right to hold unpopular beliefs. The right to protest. The right of independent thought. The exercise of these rights should not cost one single American citizen his reputation or his right to a livelihood, nor should he be in danger of losing his reputation or livelihood but merely because he happens to know someone who holds unpopular beliefs. Who of us doesn't? Freedom of speech is not what it used to be in America. It has been so abashed by some that it is not exercised by others. It is with these thoughts that I have drafted what I call a Declaration of Conscience. The Declaration reads as follows. Number one, we are Americans first. It is as Americans that we express our concern with the growing confusion that threatens the security and stability of our country. Democrats and Republicans alike have contributed to that confusion. Number two, the administration has initially created the confusion by its lack of effective leadership, by its contradictory grave warnings and optimistic assurances, by its complacency to the threat of communism here at home, by its oversensitiveness to rightful criticism, by its petty bitterness against its critics. Number three, certain elements of the parties have materially added to this confusion in the hopes of riding the party to victory through the selfish political exploitation of fear, bigotry, ignorance, and intolerance. There are enough mistakes of the Democrats for the Republicans to criticize constructively without resorting to political smears. Number four, to this extent, Democrats and Republicans alike have unwittingly but undeniably played directly into the communist design to confuse, divide, and conquer. Number five, it is high time that we stopped thinking politically as Republicans and Democrats about elections and started thinking patriotically as Americans about national security based on individual freedom. It is high time that we all stop being tools and victims of totalitarian techniques. Techniques that, if we continued here unchecked, will surely end what we have come to cherish as the American way of life.
The final selection this morning is an excerpt from an address that Adlai Stevenson gave to the American Legion Conference during his campaign for the presidency in 1952. I'd like to now invite Matt Reeder forward to read his words for us.
We talk a great deal about patriotism. What do we mean by patriotism in the context of our times? I venture to suggest that what we mean is a sense of national responsibility, which will enable America to remain master of her power, to walk with it in serenity and wisdom, with self-respect and respect to all mankind, a patriotism that puts country ahead of self, a patriotism that is not short, frenzied outbursts of emotion, but the tranquil and steady dedication of a lifetime. The dedication of a lifetime. Those are words that are easy to utter, but that is a mighty statement. For it is often easier to fight for principles than to live up to them. Patriotism, I have said, means putting country before self. This is no abstract phrase, and unhappily, we find some things in American life today of which we cannot be proud. True patriotism, it seems to me, is based on tolerance and a large measure of humility. There are men among us who use patriotism as a club for attacking other Americans. What we can say for the self-styled patriot who thinks that a Negro, a Jew, a Catholic, or a Japanese American is less an American than he, that betrays the deepest article of our faith, the belief in individual liberty and equality which has always been the heart and soul of the American idea. The anatomy of patriotism is complex, but surely intolerance and public irresponsibility cannot be cloaked in the shining armor of rectitude and righteousness. Nor can the denial of the right to hold ideas that are different, the freedom of man to think as he pleases, to strike freedom of the mind with the fist of patriotism, is an old and ugly subtlety. And the freedom of the mind, my friends, has served America well. The vigor of our political life, our capacity for change, our cultural, scientific, and industrial achievements all derive from free inquiry and from the free mind, from the imagination, resourcefulness, and daring of men and women who are not afraid of new ideas. Most all of us favor free enterprise for business. Let us also favor free enterprise for the mind. For in the last analysis, we would fight to the death to protect it. Why is it, then, that we are slow to detect or are indifferent to the dangers that beset it? It was always accounted a virtue in a man to love his country. With us, it is now something more than a virtue. It is a necessity, a condition of survival. When an American says that he loves his country, he means not only that he loves the New England hills, the prairies glistening in the sun, the wide and rising plains, the great mountains and the sea. He means that he loves an inner air, an inner light in which freedom lives and in which a man can draw the breath of self-respect. With this patriotism in its large and wholesome meaning, America can master its power and turn it to the noble cause of peace. We can maintain military power without militarism, political power without oppression, and moral power without compulsion or complacency. The road we travel is long, but at the end lies the grail of peace. And in the valley of peace, we see the faint outlines of a new world, fertile and strong. It is odd that one of the keys to abundance should have been handed to civilization on a platter of destruction. But the power of the atom to work evil gives only the merest hint of its power for good. I believe that man stands on the eve of his greatest day. I know, too, that day is not a gift, but a prize, that we will not reach it until we have won it. But we are embarked on a great adventure. Let us proclaim our faith in the future of man, our good heart and our good cheer, faithful to ourselves and to our traditions. We can lift the cause of freedom, the cause of free men and women, so high no power on earth can tear it down. We can pluck this flower, safety from the nettle, danger, living, speaking like men and women, like Americans. We can lead the way to our rendezvous in a happy, peaceful world.